Thank you for joining another episode of Tech and Main Presents, where we bring you the best insights from today's leaders and experts in technology. Today, we will be speaking with Sagi Brody of Opti9. Sagi, welcome to the Tech and Main Presents podcast.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, you are welcome. You are welcome. So, Sagi, why don't you go ahead and share your background with our audience?
Sure. Well, I am the Chief Technology Officer for Opti9. Prior to that, I was a co-founder and CTO of WebAir, which a good friend of mine started a long time ago in the late 90s. And eventually that turned into Opti9 after a long journey.
Okay. Oh, that's cool. That's cool. So you mentioned starting WebAir with a good friend of yours. Was this a friend from high school? Did you guys meet in college?
We met when I started going to college. I got a job, a side job, sort of taking care of some servers and technology, which was fun. And I met him at that job while we were both working there. And he had some aspirations of starting his own thing. And eventually he left. And after much convincing, he got me to agree to join him in the journey.
Oh, that's a great story. Sagi, I appreciate you sharing that little bit of extra background with us. So you're there at Opti9. You're the CTO. Tell us, what has you most excited about your daily work?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've sort of wore many hats throughout the years as the business has required. Today, I am kind of hyper-focused on the products that we provide out to our customers and the market. And so the process of creating something kind of from nothing. For many years, I was a programmer, and it's still a really fun and rewarding process to take an idea, see it to fruition and provide it to customers and see it working. And so I am in charge of product development, and I work with a lot, and there's lots of different inputs as far as what gets the gears turning of what we should be creating and what our customers need and what they're asking for. And I still get that sort of warm and fuzzy when we build something and we release it and it works.
Oh, that's awesome. So Sagi, tell us, you have your clients, they're bringing their issues to you to be solved, right? What are some of those issues that are facing your clients?
Yeah, I mean, so today, you know, we provide managed cloud services. We provide managed services of private clouds as well as public clouds. We also provide managed business continuity services, for instance, managed backups as a service and managed disaster recovery. Those two types of offerings have gotten increasingly popular and required mostly because of compliance requirements and new sort of security threats and increases in ransomware. And so as technology becomes more complex, being able to achieve a proper backup solution or achieve a proper disaster recovery solution is not as easy as it was. And so there's sort of like this arms race, whereas maybe there are better services and better strategies for disaster recovery, but at the same time, we're not deploying our critical infrastructure in one place or one platform. Now they're deployed on five different types of infrastructures on six different providers. And so things are becoming more complex. And so there's always new dimensions.
Okay. And so Sagi, you've got these clients, and let's brag on Opti9 a little. What are some of your clients' industries? What's your avatar, I guess, would be a good question.
Yeah, I'd say we end up working with, it's sort of like the persona of our client are typically mid-market organizations, ones who for one reason or another, a cookie cutter type of transactional service is just not working for them because they have specific compliance requirements or security requirements, or they built a framework for their network. Architecture for the network, which is not easy to sort of easily plug in third parties to. And so that's kind of the persona. I would say who fits into that bucket is typically we work with a lot of healthcare organizations, a lot of financial organizations, legal, government. And so if you think about it, sort of the larger up the stack of organizations you go, the more platforms you need to support,
sure.
the more complex the network, the more complex the security requirements, the, really the more skeletons in the closet. And I don't say that as a bad way, but there's technical debt. There's older platforms. And so the bigger the org, the more edge cases that you need to sort of be able to check off, and the less vendors that are out there that can hit all those touch points. And so we've sort of said, hey, those are a good fit for us. We've been at it for a long time. We have an appetite to kind of get our hands dirty, to bespoke, be customized. And so they're a good fit. Now, on the flip side, we don't want every deployment to be its own science project. So we're always trying to find that balance of how do we provide a scalable, reproducible, supportable at 4 a.m. on a weekend type of service, but at the same time, be able to support our customer needs, right? So that's sort of what I'm working on is how do we provide that balance?
Okay. So Sagi, you've actually already answered this question, and that being, how does your company help solve for those major customer issues? And so what we've talked about over these last few minutes is healthcare, government, right? Lots of regulation, lots of compliance, right? But the thing that I loved the most that you said is, we're not afraid to get our hands dirty, right? And that, I think, is critical because let's not kid ourselves, right? There's lots of options out there, right? And there are many people that are willing to put a proposal in front of you and say, hey, here are the 10 things that we will do for you during this engagement. Isn't the price wonderful? Go ahead and sign up here, right? Only for you to realize after the engagement starts, hey, wait a minute. You guys really don't have the expertise that you said you did. You're not really with us in the trenches like you said you would be. And so, Sagi, really from jump, you're like, that's where we thrive, right?
Exactly. And I think what's happening is this: the same thing is happening within organizations. It was, if you look at internal IT teams years ago, sort of, the landscape of what they had to manage and be responsible for was not as complex. I think one of the things I've been focused on lately is sort of the concept of complexity itself being this ever-changing sort of moving target with IT. Achieving disaster recovery was easy, but when things were not as complex, or backups. But now you have IT teams that are having to manage all these different platforms. They're having additional responsibilities being dumped on them as it relates to security and wanting to use more software-defined sort of technologies. And so the complexity is increasing. And so obviously, I think teams have to sit down and say, what do we have an appetite to take ownership for internally? Us as an internal IT team, you know, are we looking to add value to the business, or are we looking to manage infrastructure or be accountable for cybersecurity or for resilience? And so obviously this kind of makes the case a little bit for outsourcing, right? And it's, nobody can be an expert in all of these things at the same time. And so I'm not necessarily an advocate for you have to outsource everything, but I'm an advocate for sitting down and taking an account of your IT ecosystem and saying, what do we want to be in the business of managing? What makes sense to outsource and to who? I think the other thing that's going on in the industry lately is that we're now, which is kind of scary, is we're now seeing government sort of holding individuals personally liable for sort of the shortcomings of what they're doing within an organization. We saw that happening with the CEO of Drizzly. And if you say, basically are penalizing him personally in the future for not following security best practices and not protecting some customer data. Same thing happened with the CISO of Uber. And that was more of a negligence type of scenario. The Drizzly one is scary for all of us as IT leaders because basically said you didn't follow recommended best practices. Well, show me any organization that is following every single security or technology best practice. It's just impossible. And so I think another good sort of, and so when you think about like what should IT leaders be doing, it's like, well, do what's best for your organization, do what's best for your customers. You kind of now have to throw do what's best for you and your career onto that fire too. You got to protect yourself with the decisions that you're making as well, unfortunately, because of what's going on.
Oh, Sagi, that is so well said. I think when you do look at internally, who do we have on the bench? Who is great with compliance? Who's great with all of the different cloud service providers? I mean, these are real legitimate questions. And so it's not that you have to, like I said, outsource everything, but you do have to be willing to have that conversation. I think that's a great point. All right. So, Sagi, let's talk to the young people out there, those that are looking at a career in technology. What advice do you have for them?
That's a great question. Love that question. So I would say a few things. The first thing I would say is do not discount the soft skills. I'm a tech guy, right? And I have certainly been sort of enamored and sort of been sucked into the shiny object syndromes, right? And so there is an arms race of acronyms. Yes, we all have FOMO, and we're trying to get every new acronym onto our resume to show that we are relevant and keeping up with the times, right? If we're a programmer, there's always a new programming language. If we're focused on cloud, there's always new cloud PaaS types of offerings. Obviously, the same with security. That's all good. I think there is, to an extent, you kind of need to do that. But there are other skills that are relevant to your long-term career that will transcend the Kool-Aid of the day and the flavor of the week. And do not discount those, because they will get you further along. And these are not necessarily skills that are taught in sort of universities from a technical perspective, but being able to be a good technical writer, being able to document something that a colleague of yours reads while you're on vacation and it makes sense to them and he could figure it out and they don't need to call you. Being able to create a beautiful diagram, a workflow diagram of how something works. I mean, I love creating diagrams. A picture is worth 1,000 words, 1,000,000 words. So that is a skill, being able to articulate a sort of a technical process in documentation and visual and have someone be able to understand it and gain context without calling you or slacking you. That is a skill that stands on its own. People will be able to recognize that in the future. Another is being a good troubleshooter. Being good. Some people are good and some people are bad at troubleshooting. And this is something that is taught in other industries. Doctors do this. They do bedside clinics where they all go and visit a patient together while they're studying in school, and they focus on troubleshooting. It's more important for them. They misdiagnose someone. Obviously, that person can have complications. With us, it's just computers. But there's been so many situations where someone might be trying to fix something and then I might walk over, and having a lot less context sort of help them resolve the issue. And there are techniques. We're going to try to isolate, reproduce the problem. Are we troubleshooting the root cause or the cause or a symptom? A lot of technical people kind of get sort of hyper-focused on one thing. Sometimes people bring us issues. They've already sort of pre-troubleshooted it and are telling us what they think is the cause, where actually it's not the symptom, right? So I would say troubleshooting is a standalone skill that you need to train for. And if you're good with it, again, that is a skill that will be applicable to all technology in the future. Lastly, I would say being resourceful is a standalone skill. And this is certainly helpful with technology. You know, being a good Googler is a skill, right? I see you laughing. So again, like you're trying to fix something and you're stuck. What do? Do you escalate it to your boss? Do you just shove it on their plate? Great. But how is that serving you? Do you have techniques to go and search forums? Do you have some secret chat rooms that you can rely on? Do you have a network that you can rely on? Those are really important.
Sagi, you have me chuckling because I remember as a kid, I would ask my mom or dad the definition of something, and what would they tell me? Go look it up, right? Now, as a kid, you thought that kind of sucked because you wanted that instant answer, but actually what your parents were doing was they were training that muscle. They were training you to be resourceful, right? And so I love that part because there's a ton of information that's available. I think prime example, and shout out to my K-12 folks out there. This is something that a friend shared with me. If you have Palo Alto or some other firewall provider, before you completely freak out, if you see something in the logs, like call Palo Alto, right? They have engineers and technical resources available for free. You're a customer. You can actually avail yourself of those free resources. And so, Sagi, seriously, that piece of advice alone is a masterclass. Being resourceful. Wonderful answer.
Yeah, and that's a good example that you mentioned. I've worked a lot with open source technologies. In fact, when I started in the industry, there was no support. All the technologies we used had zero commercial support. You were literally on your own. And I've had people say things to me, hand me a problem, and either I figured it out or we'd lose the client. And that is tough. I mean, that really can ruin your weekend, but it also forces you to learn. On the flip side, more recently, now the industry has matured, we work with a lot of third-party vendors who provide support. And I think it's interesting when you look at different technicians that are out there, some of them are sort of super low-level engineers, and they need to be reminded that that we pay a lot of money to vendors that can help us. Why are you struggling with this issue? You can pick up the phone and talk to an expert. On the flip side, I've seen technicians too over the years who open a ticket with the vendor right away and then just sit on their hands for a few days. And so there's a balance to be had. Yeah. If I had to pick one, I'd start with the folks that have that engineering spirit. But what I tell them is, if you want to troubleshoot and be the hero and learn from it, and you have this desire to know what's going on under the hood, great. But do me a favor, at least open the ticket at the same time so that while you're doing what you want to do, maybe you get lucky and maybe they respond back to you and give you something. So I would say the goal should be to be somewhere in the middle there. You don't want to be on either end of the spectrum.
No, agreed.
In fact, to relate to your story, and this is probably not the most PC story, but when I started, again, all open source technology, even really before Google, right? Like if you wanted to be resourceful, sometimes you couldn't be. Sometimes you were looking at the source code and troubleshooting things yourself. And when I hit a brick wall, the only recourse I had would be to go into an IRC chat room with all the folks who were like writing the code and ask for help. And most of the time, sometimes they wouldn't help you because there's a lot of newbies asking silly questions, so they ignore it. I'm not proud of it, but once or twice I'd have to sort of change my name to like Jennifer New York 22 and then ask for help. And then all of a sudden I'd have like 30 private messages from people giving me the answer. And again, not PC, not proud of it either, but it is an example of being resourceful. If you need to fix an issue, you don't just Google and give up after 2 minutes. You got to figure it out. And the process of figuring it out will make you smarter and help you in so many ways.
See, that is so true. When you are faced with an issue, it's easy to give up after a couple of tries, right? Because you can report back to your leadership or to your customers, say, well, hey, we tried, but there is something to building that muscle, right? Just like every New Year's, we make that resolution, we're going to go to the gym. You do that because one of the things is you want to build endurance, you want to build muscle. And it's the same thing that you're talking about here, where you do have to spend a little more time, because what you'll find is if you push past where you are, it's not that far down the road that you'll actually get the answer or whatever it is you're looking for. So I appreciate that. All right, Sagi, let's do another series of questions here. This next one being, what is your favorite musician or band?
Ooh, a great question for a tech podcast. Well, I would say over the long term, probably Tool, which is a hard rock band. For whatever reason, I spent a lot of long nights coding, listening to them, and maybe Orbital also, which is a completely different sort of band, more electronic music. I'd say the commonality is they both have lots, they both sort of start a tune and then they just add additional layers and layers and layers. And there's all these different things happening at once. And then you kind of stick on one of the layers and then you come back to the other. And it's just very complex. And I just appreciate the complexity, I guess.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that answer. How about a favorite hobby or pastime?
I have been playing a lot of pickleball lately.
How is that?
So I moved to Florida 2 years ago and it was all very cliche. And now I'm playing pickleball. It's a lot of fun. I've never been like a competitive athlete or big into sports. And it's fun because you can pick it up quickly. You can kind of go from knowing nothing to holding your own and being slightly competitive and playing games very fast. It's very quick on ramp. Unlike tennis where you might be taking lessons for years, pickleball is quick and easy. And there's a lot of strategy to it too. So I enjoy it.
Okay. Great. And how about a favorite place to go on vacation?
I've been enjoying the Mediterranean, like any of the countries there. I just love the food and the culture. So Greek, Turkey, Italy, even Israel, just, I don't know, something about it. Something's in the air over there.
Okay. Awesome. And what teacher at any level, Sigi, would you say has had the greatest impact on you?
I had an English teacher in, I think, 7th or 8th grade that introduced me to a program called Odyssey of the Mind, which was, I had to build a structure out of balsa wood that weighed no more than 15 grams. So then it had to hold free weights. And I got involved with it. And this teacher's last year at the school. She was there for probably 20, 30 years. They had never won. And I actually built a structure and it held up all the weights that they had at the competition that ran out of weights. So it held 365.5 pounds. And she was just so excited. She was so excited and she kind of, I got excited because how she was excited. And I remember in the yearbook that year, she wrote like, you can do anything you set your mind to it. Don't ever forget that 365.5 pounds. And obviously that stuck with me. And just like what you see, you can definitely, you know, there shouldn't be a limit. And I think for me with this industry, I'm not the smartest guy in the room. I'm not the smartest tech that's out there. I'd say the difference has been, I just never gave up. I'd spend weekends and nights like pulling my hair out until I figured things out. And so I think you can compensate with maybe lack of skill with blood, sweat, and tears. Absolutely.
Just absolute friggin' tenaciousness, man. I love it. That's awesome. All right, Sigi, we've come to our last question, my friend. We're going to go back to 18-year-old Sigi. What is the Sigi of today going to tell his 18-year-old self?
Don't worry so much. Don't worry so much. Just keep at it. Good things will come. It's not going to happen in the order that you want or the timeline that you want, but just keep plugging along. And eventually the fruits of your labor will pay off.
Oh, that's great advice. All right. So Sigi, man, I cannot thank you enough for being on the podcast. This has been so wonderful. But before we let you go, what is the best way for people to get in contact with you?
Find me on LinkedIn, Sigi Brody. It's kind of a unique name. There's probably not too many else out there, LinkedIn or Twitter, and be happy to interact or provide any information or advice. And yeah, that's it.
Okay, awesome. So Sigi, again, thank you for being on the podcast. And Techaman Presents family, thank you as always for listening. And be sure to tune in next time when we will have another technology expert share their wisdom. Goodbye for now.